Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. And I invite you to subscribe to my blog, which is www.blueprintforwealth.org, where you can find interesting articles, videos, and audio on topics of interest in the tax, estate planning, and business planning areas. And also, I invite you to read my column in the Washington Business Journal entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Once a month, I publish an article or a column on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. And in fact, today's show is based on a recent article that I published in the Washington Business Journal. We're going to go into it in a little more depth in today's show. And the title of today's show, well, it's called Personal Goodwill. Do you know, when you engage in corporate acquisition talks, talks that might not get very far if a buyer and a seller disagree over transaction structure, then we have to come up with a meeting of the minds on how to structure the merger or the acquisition, because it may have a significant tax impact, after-tax impact, on the buyer and on the seller. And it's especially true of sellers that operate their business as a subchapter C corporation. A C corporation is generally a corporation or an association that's subject to tax under subchapter C, and then any distributions that are made from the corporation are subject to tax once again. It may be contrary to common opinion, but many small businesses, the focus of today's discussion, still operate as C corporations, which exacerbates the problem. For example, you might have an S corporation that was previously treated as a C corporation, and following the conversion from the C corp to the S corp, you've got a 10-year waiting period within which any built-in gain may have to be taxed at the corporate level. So this issue comes up for any of you that operate an S corp that used to be taxed as a C corporation. Now, why might a buyer and a seller prefer a different structure? In an asset sale, the buyer gets a basis in the assets that it acquires equal to the purchase price, and it's typically referred to as a step-up in basis. And as such, the buyer is allowed to depreciate or amortize the assets it buys. And this is going to result in a valuable tax write-off for the buyer. If these tax benefits trump accounting considerations, the buyer may agree to pay the seller's desired price in an asset transaction. But a C corporation seller may face double tax on the sale. Again, first, the corporation is going to be taxed upon receipt of the acquisition proceeds, and it's not going to get to pay tax at a low capital gains rate. It pays it at an ordinary rate as high as 35% for federal purposes. The dividend that's paid out to the shareholder who wants to take out the leftover proceeds from the sale are taxed again. Now, while we may be in a time period when dividend rates are taxed at historically low rates, right now 15% for federal purposes, that may change in the future, further exacerbating this problem. To avoid double tax, the seller may insist on a stock sale. Because the selling shareholder owns the stock personally, the proceeds that the seller gets are paid directly to the shareholder and bypasses the corporate tax. But a stock sale may draw a lower offering price from the buyer because the corporation's assets get a lower tax basis after the acquisition, which means that the buyer doesn't get the write-off that it was hoping to get as part of the acquisition. So this difference in structuring the transaction can make a big difference in the party's bottom line. Negotiations may end at an impasse over deal structure, but the buyer and the seller may have overlooked an important item due to its potential tax treatment may be the key in facilitating the acquisition. And that item is the selling shareholders' what we call personal goodwill. In fact, the courts have recognized this term in recent years. This is goodwill that is owned by the selling shareholder personally instead of by the corporation as an entity, which we'll call business goodwill. Buyers frequently pay more for a business than its book value, than the amount that's shown on the balance sheet or on the books and records. The premium typically represents goodwill. Goodwill usually attaches to a business, but the courts have recognized it can attach to a business owner, a person, when the corporation's value is derived from the individual's reputation, from his expertise, or from his own contacts and relationships. This is what we call personal goodwill. Assume that personal goodwill gives a business its value. Well, if that's the case, the buyer of the business, by paying the premium, is expressing his desire to purchase personal goodwill. And it assumes that the personal goodwill is treated the same as business goodwill. It's property. It's recognized as an actual intangible property interest that can be bought and sold. So how do we characterize personal goodwill? Well, that's the subject of a lot of dispute. There are two main lines of thinking on the subject. One line contends that personal goodwill, or at least a subset of which is professional goodwill, is really property, as I've expressed, and can be bought and sold. The other line of reasoning contends that personal goodwill merely represents the present value of future earnings potential and is so attached to the individual that it can't be separated. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about why personal goodwill should be and can be recognized as a property interest and used as an important tool in asset acquisitions. If you characterize personal goodwill as property, you get two main benefits in a corporate acquisition. First, it really reflects the reality of the situation. Buyers are willing to pay for this goodwill, so the law should allow the buyer to get the benefits of having to pay for it. A common argument against treating it as property is that what is personal to an individual can't be transferred to somebody else, like his personality or his ability to generate revenue or contacts. But that argument can be enumerated in some practical steps that can be taken by a buyer to actually acquire goodwill. And second, personal goodwill as property can provide significant tax benefits both to the buyer and the seller, particularly when we're dealing with a C corp or an S corp that has built-in gain. The sale of personal goodwill creates a separate transaction to the sale of the corporation's assets or stock. A C corporation seller who owns personal goodwill can benefit because its sale will not be subject to double taxation. The buyer gets a cost basis in the personal goodwill and can amortize it over 15 years. Accordingly, the sale of personal goodwill as a separate transaction can result in a more favorable after-tax result for the buyer and the seller who are forced to structure the acquisition in this manner. Now, goodwill is a familiar concept to lawyers and to tax lawyers and accountants particularly, but it's difficult to define. It's defined differently in law, it's defined differently in accounting, and it's defined differently in economics. We don't need to get into the details of that today. We'll leave that for the courts to decide. But let's dissect it into two types. One is business goodwill, the goodwill that belongs to the enterprise, the ability of a business because of its reputation or its customers or other intangible assets to earn income in excess of the income that it would be able to generate just as a mere collection of assets. Distinguished from that, personal goodwill. It attaches to an individual rather than a business. It's present when the unique expertise or reputation or relationships of an individual give a business the value that it has. For example, let's take a mom-and-pop grocery store. Customers likely are going to find a better selection and better prices at the newest Walmart that opens in town. But the customers may continue to shop at the grocery store because they like mom and pop. They're loyal to mom and pop. And if mom and pop retired, the business may lose its customers and much of its value. So mom and pop are the business and therefore reflect most of its value. In essence, mom and pop should be deemed to possess personal goodwill. It's also found in professional businesses, like in the practice of law or accounting. Let's consider a hypothetical divorce law firm. Assume one of the firm's lawyers is the best custody lawyer in the area. Unlike a client's choice to hire the big, giant law firm, a client's choice to hire the divorce firm may be conditioned on the reputation of the lawyer handling the case. If the lawyer left the firm to start her own practice, her clients are most likely going to follow her. In this scenario, the law firm itself does not possess the goodwill. The lawyer does. One commentator called a similar example. Let's say a doctor was a super neurosurgeon with extensive experience, had an excellent reputation for treating successfully highly complex and difficult neurological problems and a great bedside manner. But because of those skills and abilities, if that physician, that surgeon left the practice, then that personal goodwill would also go, and they may not be able to attract the same clients that they would had the neurosurgeon stayed with the practice. This is personal goodwill, and it has benefits. If you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at Odin Feldman & Pittleman at 703-218-2100, and we can help you structure your acquisition, if you're a buyer or a seller, to minimize tax and maximize the consequences to you. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.